Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks so much for your support. Now it's time for us to find out what happens to Nick Knight in Nightmare for Knight Part 4.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
It was beginning to make sense. Crazy, nightmarish sense, but sense. Right from the start, I hadn't been Nicky Knight, the dashing private eye. I'd been Nicky Knight, the dumb puppet, with every move planned for me. Even this last one, returning to the house with Marie Desprez, figuring it to be a surprise twist. Only the twist was on me, with a gun pointed at me by Louis Katz and the pleasant prospect of being handed over to the cops for the murder of Prince Al Zaman.
Ronk, lead the girl away. You know where to put her.
I'm sorry, Marie. I guess they're calling the tune.
You're very wise, Mr. Knight, to try nothing foolish.
I know when I've been outsmarted, Louis.
Not only outsmarted, Mr. Knight, outplanned, outmaneuvered, outthought.
Yeah, I was picked as the fall guy from the beginning, wasn't I? From the moment Haroon got his brother over here to the States on the pretext of urgent oil business. Haroon, who's your boss, of course, was getting tired of playing second fiddle to Al Zaman and planned to get rid of him. Get rid of him here in the States instead of on his own home ground.
Correct.
So Haroon engages me to protect a harem that's already protected. And then you come around with a story about your sister. Even when I beat it out of the house with Tex, you and Haroon weren't worried. You knew I'd found out from Tex that Marie was in the house and that I'd come straight to you.
Which you did, Mr. Knight.
Yeah, and played right into your hands for the murder of Al Zaman. Back I come with you, and Fatso gets it, with me all set to take the rap. The only slip-up was with you, Louie. You couldn't know that I'd been tipped off about you by the house dick at the hotel. But I hadn't figured it all then. I was just suspicious of you. That's why I tapped you on the skull and beat it with Marie.
But you have come back, Mr. Knight.
Yeah, I even worked that out right. While I was getting Marie out of the way, Haroon and Hassan were carefully collecting texts. Hassan is Haroon's man, too, like you. And then after the phone call proposing the quid pro quo, or more accurately, the girl for girl, you figured I'd come straight back here, hoping to surprise you. You waited for me, and here I am.
Like a good little pawn, going from square to square, exactly as anticipated.
Yeah, the perfect pawn.
Which is about to be taken. You heard that car? That will be His Highness Haroon, the new prince with the police. Goodbye, Mr. Knight. It's been fun playing with you.
Yeah, they had it worked out to a T. T for Tombstone, with my name on it. Oh, there's something very depressing about sitting in a cell swearing at yourself for a sucker. And that was how I spent the time all that night and next morning. That and thinking about Tex, worrying if she was all right. And then round about midday, I was taken out of the cell and driven to a downtown office, where a gray-haired guy sat behind a desk with a slim, efficient-looking character next to him.
Take a chair, Mr. Knight.
And what is this? Who are you?
My name doesn't matter. This gentleman is Mr. Wilde.
Hello.
First of all, please accept my apologies for having kept you in that cell so long, but when your statement came to us, we had to investigate, and that takes time.
I don't get it.
You will when I tell you that we checked your story about Marie Desprez and found it to be true.
Oh, you did, huh? That's nice.
Don't play tough, Knight. This isn't the time or the place for it.
It's all right, Wilde. Mr. Knight can't be blamed for feeling a little sore.
Oh, a little?
But I suggest you don't say any more, Mr. Knight, till I put you in the picture. an international picture.
Okay, okay.
It's mostly concerned with Prince Alzaman and his country's oil. As you probably know, that oil is extremely valuable to us, and incidentally to France. For a long time, the United States and Britain have advocated that Alzaman should be deposed, but France has remained firm. As long as the oil came out of the country, they weren't worried with what went on inside. There's a democratic party within the country. It's been fostered for some time, and it's ready to take power. We could assist them to do that, bloodlessly, and now is the time, with Alzaman dead. But, of course, the French must agree.
Now, wait a minute, the French...
You're getting it now, aren't you? It's important that Mr. Spray must be found alive.
Yeah.
The indignation of the French people when they learn what happened to her will swing their government to our way of thinking.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, our big problem is to find Mr. Spray. Have you any idea where she would be?
Yeah, sure, somewhere in the house. It's an old place. There'd be a cellar. They'd probably put Tex there as well.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about the other girl.
I hadn't.
As soon as Haroon even thinks we're suspicious, he will undoubtedly murder the Desprez girl or both of them. That's the tricky part. Mr. Wilde here is from the FBI, but I can't use him or his men any more than I dare send a squad of police with tear gas and Tommy guns into the place. It would be signing the French girl's death warrant.
Looks like a one-man job. And I'm the one man.
Why, Mr. Knight?
Because I know the house.
He's right, sir.
Look, here's an idea. Take me back to headquarters, book me for murder. Let the press get all the pictures they want. When Haroon sees that in the papers, he'll feel safe again. Then pull out all the cops at the house. Tomorrow night, let me out of a side door in the jail.
It's not bad, sir. It could work.
Yes, well, I suppose it could. It's a risk, but on the other hand, I can't think of any better scheme. Very well, Mr. Knight. That's how we'll do it.
Okay, you guys, keep it quiet.
All
right, now we got over the wall. Nicky, this is where you're on your own.
Yeah, me and my 32.
I've got another gun for you. Here.
Hey, what's this, a 6-inch howitzer?
It's a rocket gun. You've got an emergency, you point it out the window and you pull the trigger. We'll see the rocket, all right.
All right, thanks.
The best place to carry it is in your sock.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Just hope it doesn't go off and leave me minus 3 toes.
Now we'll fan out and watch for your signal. If it doesn't come within 20 minutes, we'll come in anyway. Good luck, kid.
Well, thanks again. So long. For the third time now, I crept up to the back door. For the third time now, it was unlocked. These characters obviously didn't believe in guarding their rear. I was halfway across the kitchen, and I heard voices. I looked around for a place to hide. It was a broom cupboard built into the wall. I got in with the brooms and pulled the door to, leaving just a crack to see through. A second later, the light was switched on, and Haroon and my old pal Louis came in.
So, in a week, Louis, we shall leave the United States. I return home to take up my rightful position.
Well, Mr. Knight remains to die for the murder of your brother. A sacrifice in honor of the new prince, eh?
What about the two young ladies?
Well, I'm about to take their food to them, Highness. The team has prepared the tray.
Good food, I see. Excellent. I don't like thin women. Return to me in the library, Louis, when you have finished. We have other plans.
I watched Louis pick up the tray and disappear through a door I'd never seen before. It looked like part of the paneling when it was closed. I gave him a minute or so and then headed after him. The door opened on a flight of steps leading down. I'd been right about the cellar.
Here's your meal. Eat up. His Highness Prince Haroon prefers women who are well filled.
I'd like to fill him with arsenic.
Or even lead, honey.
Night!
Which means the long sleep for you.
Maybe I knew you'd make it. I told Marie you'd find us.
We're not out of here yet, Tex, baby. Get back to Marie and keep down on the floor, both of you. This will bring the rest of them here like hornets.
All right, Nicky. Down on the floor, Marie, quick!
It will not help you, Mr. Knight. Fire low, Hassan, to floor level. Hassan, the machine gun you see, Mr. Knight. Against that, you have no chance.
No? Oh, that takes care of Hassan and his Tommy gun. Now you're on your own, Your Highness. Come on down and demonstrate how brave a prince can be. Not good enough, Haroon.
What's the matter? Too scared to come down?
No, Mr. Knight, not scared now since your gun is empty. I always wait my time, you see. And my time, Mr. Knight, is now.
Is it?
As he came down the steps, I remembered the rocket gun in my sock. I grabbed for it and pressed the trigger. Haroon was practically on top of me when it hit him. When I came to think of it, he didn't stay a prince for long. Later that day, I was back in the office of the gray-haired guy.
Congratulations, Knight. You did a magnificent job.
I'll just pin the medal above the heart, General, and I'll go home.
With both Al's a man and Haroon out of the way, that line of succession is gone forever. And we feel confident that a much more democratic regime will take its place. The people should erect a statue in your honor, but they probably won't.
Just tell me one thing. Who exactly are you?
Oh, let's just say that I'm connected with the State Department. My job is connected with what happens in other countries. You know, the things you don't read about in the newspapers.
Well, of course. Of course I'm dumb. Espionage, huh?
Yes, that's the ticket. You know, if you were interested, I could use a man like you.
Well, it's very kind of you, but no thanks. I'll stick to a nice quiet racket like the private eye business.
Hasn't been so quiet these last few days, has it?
No, but it's going to be much quieter for the next few days. You see, there's someone back at my apartment who'll see to that.
You know, Nicky?
Yeah?
There were times when I just couldn't believe I'd ever sit in an American apartment again and hear some real American music again.
With a real American man again, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although, you know, those Eastern guys have one idea that's not bad.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
A harem. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Oh?
Sure, you get tired of a brunette, so you pick a blonde. You get tired of a blonde, and you pick a redhead.
No, you want to rewrite it. You get tired of a certain brunette, and you pick up prussic acid in your morning coffee.
I never drink morning coffee.
You will that morning.
Honey, I was only kidding. I love you, Tex.
I love you, Nicky.
Enough to marry me?
Nicky, you've got yourself a one-woman harem for life.
That takes care of Nicky Knight. His nightmare's over, or it's just starting, depending how you look at it. Well, I'll be back to bring you another of my books. The next one's called Destiny Danger, the story of an English undercover man who didn't stay undercover enough. So this is Carter Brown saying so long for now. Be seeing you.
In Nightmare for Night, you heard June Salter as Tex, while as Nicky Knight, you heard our star, John Bushell. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, based on the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Maurice Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.
Welcome back. You know, these programs require suspension of disbelief. Some more than others. There's so much that's remarkable about the way that this all, ended. You almost get the idea, since this is based on the book, that the writer of Carter Brown's, of the Carter Brown stories, got Nick Knight into such a predicament, couldn't figure out how to write him out. So we end up with a guy from the State Department hiring him to break into the prince's, to the new prince's, quarters. And we get one of the most remarkable results. Only on a, in a Carter Brown mystery show will you be sent to nonviolently rescue two hostages from the home of a foreign head of state and end up blowing up the foreign head of state instead and be told by a State Department official, nicely done. Well played. Have you ever thought about joining up with us? I mean, in reality, if an oil-producing state had its prince blown apart with a rocket on U.S. soil, and the person who was illegally entering their premises was not punished, you would end up with a more, you know, radical leader, even in the 1950s. So this is just the most far-out ending to a mystery story that I've heard. That said, I also have to give some compliments to Carter Brown on this, in that his detectives can actually get married, because his characters are, for the most part, one-time use, so he doesn't need to have this ongoing tension. Even though I think most... I guess the less said about this, the better. All right, well, next week, we are actually switching the order of programs. Johnny Dollar will be first. Carter Brown's story will be second, which, with all the commentary I had on this week's show, might be better in the long run. Now, let's go ahead and take a listen to Johnny Dollar with Bob Bailey, part 5 of The Henderson Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
I have a call for you from Hartford. Go ahead, please.
Johnny?
Right here.
Connor's at Paramount Adjusters. Say, what was this wire, Johnny? You serious about denying liability to Mrs. Henderson?
I sure am. I think it'll bring the whole thing out in the open.
This is pretty serious. Have you got any concrete evidence death wasn't accidental?
Jim, I have a copy of the coroner's inquest. Concrete evidence that Mrs. Henderson lied under oath. She said her husband was drinking the morning he died. Everybody here believed he was a little crocked when he fell out that hotel window. I've got proof that he didn't have a drink that morning.
What proof?
No bottle in his room. No bottle brought there. Nothing. What do you say?
Don't make a move, kiddo. I'll get the first plane.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Paramount Insurance Adjusters, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Henderson matter. Sheriff Holton agreed that there was enough of a doubt about the circumstances prior to George Henderson's accidental death to warrant an official reexamination of all the facts. He promised me the police would start an immediate investigation. That was all I needed. I knew Mrs. Henderson would be re-questioned and that the pressure would start to build up. 14 hours later, when Tim Connors arrived in Culver, I had some pressure of my own.
Well, Johnny, what?
Well, the best thing we can do now is move in. Deny liability on the grounds that the accident is not proved.
I suppose Mrs. Henderson sues us.
All right, let her. Then the burden of proving that her husband's death was accidental would be on her. Look, Tim, contrary to her testimony under oath, Henderson didn't have a drink that morning he died.
All right, she made a mistake. He had a heart attack, got dizzy, and tumbled out of the window. He wasn't drunk.
Oh, don't talk nonsense, Tim. Listen to me. Mrs. Henderson was ready for the coroner's jury a couple of days ago, and she was ready for my questions when I saw her yesterday. The only one she wasn't ready for was you a few days ago when you phoned her long distance. You said she hung up on you. Well, she half apologized to me for that. but it was because she couldn't think of anything to say.
Well, maybe you're right. But suppose he did die accidentally, and suppose it is a just insurance claim.
I tell you it isn't.
Now, the fact that she made a mistake testifying about him having a drink and... Hey, Johnny, do you have anything else?
Three things. Instinct, experience, and statistics. Pauline Henderson's a young woman. She married a wealthy older man. With him out of the way, she has all his money and all her youth.
All right, I'm going to phone the company as soon as I can find a phone.
Tell them I'm working for evidence, and the best way to get it is to bring Mrs. Henderson out in the open. File a complaint against her.
What charge?
Suspected murder.
Oh, no, Johnny, that'd get us in all kinds of trouble.
Remember the drink, Tim. Henderson didn't have the drink.
Now we'll have to have more than that. I'm sorry, Johnny.
All right, I'll get you more. An hour later, I was with Sheriff Holden comparing notes. He reported that after questioning Mrs. Henderson, she admitted she might have been mistaken about Henderson drinking the morning of his death. She wasn't sure. But Eve Holden said what we both were thinking.
He went in front of the coroner's jury and gave a misleading impression, son. Made us think that George was drunk and stumbled out the window. Well, we better find out who helped her pull this off.
Sheriff Holden had every man in his office working on the case by then. It was a long, tedious job of combing over everything in Pauline Henderson's background to find a possible accomplice. About 5 p.m, I drove to the Henderson ranch with Holden. Mrs. Henderson was out, but we interviewed one of the servants.
That's right, sir. Once or twice a week.
You know where she drove to on these trips?
I have no idea. Mrs. Henderson would get up early in the morning and be gone all day.
How do you know she went out of town?
Well, generally take a small suitcase with her, change of clothes. You don't take those when you're visiting a friend in town, do you?
Tell us what car she'd use on these trips.
The Cadillac. Always come back covered with mud and ice. Always have to be washed up. Mr. Henderson used to complain about that.
About the car being dirty?
About the trips, mostly. He and Mrs. Henderson had some pretty good arguments about him. He'd say Mrs. Henderson shouldn't visit that man.
What man?
Just that man. I never knew who it was they argued about.
You've known Mrs. Henderson quite a long time, huh?
Yes, sir. Knew her when she was a little girl, when she first came here. Saw her grow up, go away to school, go away to Europe, come back a little more grown up, a little different every time.
Were you surprised when Mr. Henderson married her?
Well, no. Well, yes, guess I was.
Because she was so much younger?
Not that so much. I mean, well, Mr. Henderson, he had something about the plains and cattle and mountains about him. When he moved, it was as big as all them things. Mrs. Henderson was different.
She didn't fit in here? Is that what you're trying to say?
I think she fit. Not like him, though. Before they were married, they were sort of like good friends. I mean, they'd ride horses and go hunting and laugh and talk about different things. Mrs. Henderson, she traveled Europe, saw so many things and places in the world. She fit here, but then she didn't belong here. I feel awful about Mr. Henderson's being dead. If there was anything wrong with the way he died, I'd like it to be fixed. Mrs. Henderson will probably fire me for talking like this, but I don't care. This house isn't the same no more.
By the time we got back into town, Sheriff Holden's boys had discovered the names of three men who had been seen at various places around Culver in the company of Mrs. Henderson.
Rod Tyler.
Oh, who's he?
Mining engineer. He's been away from here for over a year now. Yeah, here's another one, Sam Pollard. Sam died 6 months ago. Hey.
What?
Noah Baxter.
Noah Baxter. That name's vaguely familiar.
Yeah, he owns a hotel you're staying in. A couple of ranches, too. Well, he might have been the one who tried to have you thrown out.
Oh.
He also owns the mayor.
Young man?
About 30, 35.
Let's go see him. Another drive. This time north of Culver to the Baxter Ranch. We found Noah Baxter busy with his help shoring horns on cattle. A lean, tall man with thin features.
If you're trying to find out if I've been seeing Pauline on the sly while she'd been married to George, why didn't you come right out and ask?
All right, have you?
No, not on the sly. There's nothing between us. George knew any time she came over here to see me. He was a good friend of mine. I'm sorry he's dead. Pauline's a good friend of mine, too. I'm sorry you people are thinking what you are about us. Let's go up the house. It's getting cold. All right, Stan, that's enough for today. No, I got to ask you this. Where were you last Thursday?
The day George died, Sheriff?
Yeah.
I was right here.
Can you prove that?
Sure.
Ask anybody.
You boys want a drink?
No, thanks.
No.
Well, I do. Mac! Mac!
I get it myself.
When was the last time you were in cover, Mr. Baxter?
3-4 weeks ago. My cook and the others handle what supplies we need.
Do you mind if we talk to some of your help around here?
No. What do you want to talk to them about?
About last Thursday, about what happened when Mrs. Henderson came here to visit.
It wouldn't look good if she came here to visit me, would it?
Well, that depends on the circumstances, no?
Huh. She'd come and sit there and read and look at some of those paintings. We'd talk when I had time. Anything wrong with that?
No. Mr. Baxter, I think I ought to tell you, I've asked my company to file a complaint against Mrs. Henderson. Suspicion of murder.
Oh. I'd like to tell you something. She didn't kill him and she didn't have him killed. She loved him a lot more than George loved her, I think. Both of you know her. Her dad was a drunken cowhand. When he died, George took her over, gave her everything. So you see, you're wrong. She loved George for giving her what he gave her, and mostly for being the kind of a man he was. I lied to you a couple of minutes ago. There was something between us. It was bound to happen sooner or later. She'd come here to cry on my shoulder, and I let her.
Cry?
About George. He wanted to divorce her. Didn't you know that?
I had the idea it was the other way around.
Oh, you're all wrong. George raised her, educated her, made her into a woman, and then he married her. And she wasn't what he wanted at all. Do you know who George wanted to marry? Mattie Knickerbocker, the schoolmarm.
Go on.
Oh, there was nothing between George and Mattie, but there would have been if he'd lived.
What about you and Mrs. Henderson?
Yeah. The thing that was between us was that I wanted her. She didn't want me, but I wanted her. I was glad when she told me about the divorce coming up. I really think she would have listened to me. But she wanted to be married to George. She really loved him. Sure you don't want one of these?
No.
Nope. And I really loved her. I went to see George last Thursday at his hotel. You know why? To tell him to go back to Pauline. Yeah. Because I knew what he meant to her. You can talk to my people around here. They'd lie for me and say I was here last Thursday all day. They'd tell you that Pauline never came to see me. They'd lie right down the line for me. But, Mr. Dollar, I can't let you get out that complaint and take her in. One of my trucks was taking some beef to the hotel last Thursday. I rode in with the driver and went in the back way. I went right up to George's room to talk to him. Pauline had just left. I wanted to talk to him about the same things I've been telling you. I didn't want to hurt him. I loved him, the same as everybody loved him. When I got to his room, he wouldn't let me talk at all. He was mad that I interfered, and he tried to swing on me. I shoved him once. He went out the window. That's all. I killed him.
Expense account, item 8, $58.15, hotel and food while in Culver, Montana. Item 9, same as item 2, transportation by train and plane back to Hartford. Item 10, $88, miscellaneous. Expense account total, $802.50. Remarks? We still had to pay double indemnity. Mattie Knickerbocker, Pauline Henderson, Noah Baxter, they'll pay another way. With the hurt that comes to nice people. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
remember, there'll be another exciting story beginning next Monday night.
Next week, a real mystery, complete with plenty of action, a beautiful blonde, and a killer lurking in the shadows. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baeff, Irene Tedrow, D.J. Thompson, Herb Ellis, Marvin Miller, Forrest Lewis, Bob Bruce, and Russ Thorson. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. You know, if I had listened to this episode first, I probably would have had a much bigger plausibility issue with Johnny encouraging the insurance company to press ahead with trying to get the widow charged with murder based on the fact that it may not have been an accidental death. But after what we heard in Carter Brown, this doesn't seem quite as egregious. This was based on a John Lon Johnny Dollar script, The Underwood Matter. We played it as episode 570 back on December 30th, 2011. First aired February 27th, 1953. And like a lot of the Lon scripts, there was definitely, this one heads up to an anticlimactic conclusion. And really, you get the sense that Johnny's, for lack of a word, his sort of prejudice from all the years that he has been in insurance investigation, playing the percentages, that he had a really firm idea of what was going on and how this was going to go. And really, uncharacteristically, I think in some ways, went off half-cock, just kind of on instinct here. And it didn't quite turn out in this episode. But of course, next week's another case. So we'll resume on Monday with another Johnny Dollar story with Bob Bailey. Now we turn to listener comments and feedback. And we begin with Kelly, who says, Adam, 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 even after that nice man called and told you how to pronounce it correctly, you still kept saying wrong. It's not Shostovich, it's Shostakovich. Please do the man the honor of saying his name right. Shostakovich, Shostakovich. And I will say, mea culpa, Kelly. Sometimes it's weird. There are certain names that I will struggle with pronouncing right. I know that in early episodes, I made a key faux pas not pronouncing Poirot right. But we mean no respect to Mr. Shostakovich, the author, the composer of the opening theme. And we will try and say his name right in the future. And my apologies for the mistake on that. Thanks so much, Kelly. Finally, we have a tweet. The one negative on doing some of the short series is we don't get listener feedback until after we're done recording them. But we do have a tweet from D. Cody regarding the big guy, who writes, "It is sure different than the other shows you play, but not bad." Well, thanks so much, and I'm glad you enjoyed the big guy, and hope you'll enjoy Mr. Moto coming up next week. Well, also this weekend, we will have the one public domain Mr. Moto movie. Mr. Moto's Last Warning will be this month's video theater. I'll have more details in terms of family friendliness and stuff like that. At the end of tomorrow's episode of The Lineup. Well, remember, we will be back on Monday with another episode of Johnny Dollar, and on Friday. Join us for a brand new Carter Brown story starting next Friday. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.